Shock the System. Welcome to Dank Discussions with your host, Calican CEO Maynard Breslow. In each episode, you'll learn from the trailblazers, leaders, entrepreneurs, and influencers in the ever-moving, ever-growing cannabis industry.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Dank Discussion. Today, we're joined by Christina D'Arcangelo. Christina is an entrepreneur and CEO with more than two decades of experience between the medical, cannabis, CBD industry, biotechnology, pharmaceuticals, nutraceuticals, and device companies. And as the founder and CEO of Affinity Biopartners, board president and CEO of Affinity Patient Advocacy, and CEO and co-founder of AI Health Outcomes, right? Christina has been involved with revolutionary products and global clinical studies that positively impact patients. Wow, Christina, that's a lot, you know? So thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me today. I know I always like, when people read my bio, I'm like, oh my God, like there's so much stuff in there, but I really have done all these things.
I love it. You know, and it was so funny, right? Because I was, you know, as we were preparing for the recording, I was looking at all this stuff, doing research, and I was like, oh my gosh, does she ever sleep? And then when we got on, right, people can't see us. Christina's like, can you see me, this and that? You know, she's like, been going on since 6 a.m, everything else. I mean, do you get sleep? What's going on with all this stuff?
I don't sleep a lot, that's for sure. And it's you know, as I had mentioned when we first got on, it's because we're working on so many different things. I constantly am shifting my hat. You know, if it's a patient that calls for APA, if you on the website see that phone number on there for affinitypatientadvocacy.org, that's my direct cell phone number. So they call, when they call, they get my phone number. So patients, I'm moving to a patient. I'm working on a clinical study, whether it's traditional, because I still do a little bit in traditional COVID. I'm also working on a major depressive disorder study, which obviously like a whole program of them. That's so important right now, right? With where we are with mental health. And then I have spectral analytics telemonitoring, where we're trying to get our system up so we start our perpetual studies. My son, you know, I have an 8-year-old and he's special needs. So just trying to stay on top of what's going on with him and working. He goes to a great school district, thank God. And so we have a great team, but just, you know, and I'm a patient. I have 2 autoimmune diseases. So it's like, I don't really sleep that much.
Well, here we are, you know, and obviously, you know, with your son, right? Kids don't care, our busy schedules, everything that goes on, it's like everything stops for the kids, you know, so I love that. Now, you know, today we're going to be talking about some cool stuff, obviously talking about, you know, you're Baha'i, we're going to be talking about kind of the values and how that intersect, and we're talking about the patient aspect, things that people go through, and some of the challenges that you face there, either people that you've helped, and people, you know, your son and everything else in between, and obviously talking about Affinity Biopartners. So plenty to talk about, you know, and really excited. But, you know, as I always say, you know, I like to start it off easy. So let our listeners know where you're based out of today.
Okay. Thank you so much. I'm based out of the greater Philadelphia area today. That's where I've been. Pretty much I came back from the Bay Area in 2010. My father had come out of remission with cancer. And at that point we had thought that perhaps his life, he hadn't been in hospice yet, but that there was a definite pattern of him spiraling downward and I needed to come back. And I'd launched my first company, Armonia Clinical Research at that time, which was my first CRO in 2010. So I could come back and work, although I've done so well in the Bay Area and I'm very well known still over there. And I had an office over there leading up till, you know, COVID, and then I shut it down. But I'm in Philadelphia now.
Very good. Yeah. I mean, you know, transitioning, I guess, from San Fran, right, in 2010, where cannabis, you know, the kind of obviously the view how it is over there, going to Philadelphia. Talk about the transition, you know, at that time, and also how it is now, right? I mean, how it is now, and talk to me how that works.
That's a great question. Thank you for asking me that, because people don't always understand, right, that whole like transition, which was, you know, Pennsylvania in 2010 did not have a program. We have only been around for less than 5 years in our program, right? So when I came back, there was not a legalized program here. And that was obviously interesting to come back to an area that didn't, but also just to readjust from a culture standpoint. It's very different, you know, on the West Coast versus the East Coast. And I found that I'm kind of like a hybrid of a person because I grew up in the Philadelphia area. Then I moved to North Carolina for a little while for my career down to Wilmington, North Carolina. And then I moved out to the Bay Area. So I considered myself kind of a hybrid. And then I had decided when I was in California, because I grew up Roman Catholic, I'm Italian. So that's usually, you know, we're usually Christian in the Italian heritage standpoint. I had transitioned to a Baha'i when I was over there. So then I come back, not only, you know, we do not have cannabis legally, we, you know, as far as a program, a different culture, and then I'm Baha'i, and all my family is still Christian and still Catholic. And it was very challenging because I was an outlier, you know, to to who they are.
No, yeah, I mean, so that's another thing, right? I mean, so hybrids, right? I think, you know, I mean, we talked about at the beginning, all these kind of things that you've been involved with, all these kind of, you know, what do you call it? Anyways, all these kind of things that you've been involved with, right? And not only that, but here you are in different locations, this, and now you're talking about, you know, different phase moving from here to there. Is that just like, Christina, is that what you like to do? You like to move from thing to thing a little bit and get a little bit of this, a little bit of that, incorporate them all together? Is that like a common thing?
That's certainly it. You know, as we were talking early on, earlier today, I said, you know, I am lucky. I embrace my ADHD brain because I flop from one thing to the next, right? Like we talked about where a patient could call me or I'm on the phone with the Dominican Republic FDA Zoom, you know, and there's a doctor on the call that he's in a party bus. And I swear this happened 3 weeks ago. And it's like, I'm in the middle of my day and I'm doing that. And then I go back to whatever I need to do for another client, you know, that's a completely different client. So it's just constantly trying to switch from one thing to the next in a successful manner, but it drives people crazy to talk to me because I talk about a million things, all different, and then things pop into my head. I'm like, oh yeah, I got to tell you about this. And then people get annoyed because I'm now talking about something else that had nothing to do with what we originally were talking about, but I can't help it because it's just how my brain is.
Oh yeah, exactly. I mean, I talk about it as well. You know, ADHD, it's kind of my superpower, I'm sure yours as well. You know, we're able to do all yep. these things and sometimes a drag, but when you know how to really channel in the right way, you know, adults with ADHD, I think it's a lot better for us now than probably when we were kids, probably a lot better for our parents and for teachers and everything else. You know, poor people, they had to put up with our stuff as we were going up, but we also had to put up with it. But, you know, but definitely, you know, that aspect of being able to juggle and all that stuff definitely, I'm sure it lends a lot to the success you've experienced and the different things you've been doing for sure.
Thank you so much for that. I mean, it's just always been focused on patients. Like if you look at my career, you know, once I got out of the legal field, which was very early on in my career, I moved into a patient focused career. And, you know, I grew up with a very sick grandfather who had his first heart attack when he was 35. I was, you know, I wasn't even born yet. And then my whole life, he just kept getting worse. He had all kinds of, 35. So like when I, you know, you can imagine when I turned 35 a couple of years ago, I'm kidding.
Why not? I mean, I'm 35. You could be 35. No problem. You know, I mean, you have a son who's 8 years old, so it's right up there. You know what I mean?
Thank you so much.
A lot of experience that you've had though. And you started at 15. Well, you did say, right, that you mentioned before, right? You were a paralegal at 20. Right.
Yes, I was a paralegal.
You've been on the hustle from the beginning.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I always say like I was blessed, you know, because my dad was a very hardworking man, you know, blue collar in the trenches. You know, he worked for a steel company when I was born all the way up until they closed after their third bankruptcy. And then he was president of the Steelworkers Union. Then he switched to the Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission and then was a Teamster. So we actually get to work with the Teamsters now, because I don't know if you know this or the viewers out there, but they have a division in the Teamsters Union for cannabis representation.
Wow.
And Kristen Heidelbach is in charge of that. she and I have been working together since I've gotten into the cannabis space. And it's because I'm a Teamsters kid, because Teamsters do not like big pharma, right? Because of the drug prices, because they're self-insured, right? They insure their members with their healthcare. So if the prices are high, there go their costs, right? And so they don't like us, but I'm very fortunate that they like me, because I'm not the cookie cutter, you know, big pharma person who's just looking to make some money off of this. I took a pay cut when I got into the medical cannabis and CBD clinical research space, a big pay cut, because I stopped working in traditional pharma for a while so that I could work on this, because this is where I can really help patients and make a difference.
Wow. Wow. Now, I mean, so first of all, I would definitely want to talk. Ursula mentioned, you know, about being Baha'i, and I want to talk about that and, you know, and how that kind of plays with cannabis, but something just can't, right? So Teamsters, right? Talk to me as if I'm a 6-year-old. Explain to me what Teamsters, what this means, because when I think of Teamsters, I think of like Jimmy Hoffa, you know,
that's them.
Right? So,
that's them, Hoffa Jr. He's in charge. And so basically what they do for the cannabis industry is protect the cannabis rights workers. So in California and elsewhere, where the employer, the grower, say, for example, wants to pay you with an eighth of whatever kush blah they have, how are those workers going to pay their electric bill with that? That's not possible. They need to be paid in accordance to what is legal, which is a salary or, you know, a check if they're a consultant, right? If they're a 1099. So what they do in the cannabis space, specifically with the Teamsters, is represent people who work in this space that are become members. So it could be growers, like one of the growers out in Chicago, GTI, I believe, is represented. They have the cannabis, they're obviously a cannabis grower, but their employees unionized with the Teamsters. So the Teamsters represent them, which is huge, because they make sure they protect their rights. They have equal pay. They get paid time and a half when they work extra. They get the proper benefits they're entitled to, that they're allowed to have breaks, that there's no harassment that goes on in the workplace. An example of that is something that happened in Pennsylvania that I know about, because I happen to know the person that works for a dispensary. And in Pennsylvania, it's a non-smoke state, right? Even though you can buy flower, you're not supposed to be smoking. And their CEO was smoking a joint or a blunt or something in the office while they're working, when this is a non-smoke state. And secondly, you're consuming on the job. And the workers, when they would take their medicine, you know, they would have to go outside and do it. They couldn't do it in the office. But you can, as the boss. See, that's when the Teamsters have to get involved.
Yeah, exactly. You know, whoever makes the rules, right? It's to break the rules, all that fun stuff.
Now, what's good for the goose, right?
But yeah, you know, so now talk to me then now about, you know, what that, talk to me about, you know, so here you are, you're in San Francisco, right? You got converted to Baha'i. Now, first of all, talk to me a little bit about what that is, right? What I think we talk about, you know, those kind of mainstream whatever and everything. But also talk to me about this one thing that really interests me, right? I mean, I'm an observant Jew, so I always love to hear, you know, I have my viewpoint on cannabis and within our communities and everything, and also hearing other people and how maybe someone from the South and the Bible Belt may have another kind of idea. Talk to me about that intersection of Baha'i and cannabis and how they play together.
Sure. So, you know, the Baha'i religion hasn't been around forever, right? It's only been around since the early 1900s. Our holy land, similar to yours, is in Haifa, Israel as well. We believe in universal justice. So in other words, we believe that everyone, regardless of their color, their gender, what they practice from a religious standpoint, they all have this equal rights, right? Everybody is the same. It doesn't matter if you're male, female, it doesn't matter. What's really important with the Baha'i religion is the whole concept of giving back, concept charity. Charity is very important. So your actions and what you do every day, do you give back? So this, you know, knowing who I am as a person, you know, the people that don't know me today that are listening, that is what I do all the time, right? Because even before I had my nonprofit that I started, because my dad ended up passing from cancer and I was his advocate, and it showed me the way that I needed to help others. Again, it tugged on my Baha'i heart because it was like, wait a minute, there's an unmet need here for people. They need help. So that's how I really kind of started in the cannabis space, was that I recognized a need based on what I could see from a research standpoint. And think about it, 5 years ago, there wasn't that much out there. A lot of it was anecdotal, which I'm not fond of. But I decided to just plunge forward in because I knew I could help more people that way from a therapeutic standpoint than if I continue to stay in traditional pharma.
Copy that. Now, I guess, you know, talking about that universalism and that giving back aspect, right? I mean, you know, I think something that we want to talk about as well is kind of that patient advocacy, right? And how do those play in together, you know? And talk about some of the work that you've done, you know, with patients and the patient aspect.
Well, thank you, because it's really, you know, when I observe like all the stuff I do, I'm like, wow, like, this is amazing. And then some of the quotes that I see that come up, because I follow a lot of the Baha'i chapters, obviously, on Instagram, because I'm an active, like really, truly active Baha'i. I pray 2-3 times a day. My son is being raised Baha'i. We say a morning prayer together, and then night. Well, sorry, he's not a little kid anymore. I still call him night. I still say night. Nighttime prayers. It's very important that, you know, Christian also is developed, you know, into this space, because he's also a biracial kid. So my son, you know, is now growing up as a, you know, in a single parent household. We co-parent, my ex-husband and I, but he's a biracial kid, and he's got developmental disorders, right? Or mental health. So it's really important for him, I feel, to know that he has a safety net. So there's a healing prayer that we say every night. So when he feels aggravated, even myself, I say a healing prayer, which again ties to my patient advocacy work, right? Because all we want to do is help people and we want them to heal, right? So some of the stuff that we've been doing, you know, I started APA, that's our acronym, in 2015. So I had filed the paperwork before my dad passed at the end of September of 2015. And then literally 2 days after he passed, I got the approval from the state to proceed forward as a company and a nonprofit. So it was a big day, you know, because it was like before he died, he knew I was going to do something in his honor and his legacy, because he served people. Again, very Baha'i, but he wasn't a Baha'i. And towards the end of his life, he started embracing who I was as a Baha'i, which was really important, because my dad was my number one, right? He still is my number one, even though he's not here today. He's in my heart every day. I see him and me and my son, watching my son grow up, and he does certain things like motions, the fact that he has a style about him, the way he has his haircut. It's very much like my father. And he was only influenced for 3 years. My dad then died. So this is like such, it's so impactful, you know. But as far as what we've done for patients, it originally started out as an oncology company because my dad died from cancer. So for me, that was my focus, right? It was like, oh, a pain point, you know, this, we have to fix this. This is a mess. These people, they get sick. There's all these things wrong. People aren't talking to people. There's all these doctors. You don't know what's going on. There's drug-drug interactions. So we started helping immediately cancer patients. Then when I got into the cannabis space, very quietly, from a nonprofit standpoint, only because I could have lost my 501c3 status. Because if you recall, a few years ago, the IRS said that if anyone was working in cannabis and had a nonprofit, they'd yank their rights to have a nonprofit status with the government because you're considered illegal. Even though I wasn't a plant-touching person at that point, I was afraid. So we stayed in the closet, but people figured out who I was because of Affinity Biopartners, which is the clinical research organization that was fully in the cannabis space doing research. I didn't care. It's under my for-profit company. There's nothing you can do. I don't touch plants. I'm running research. I'm designing studies. Once I started speaking on behalf of patients, then, and it always said Affinity Biopartners, Affinity Patient Advocacy, then those patients started coming to me. So we started really getting in there and helping these people, whether it was helping them get a card if they were in Pennsylvania or recommending products, or in one of the instances that we talked about earlier before we started recording, we had a patient that lost his job. He was taking isolate that has, I'm sorry, not isolate. He was taking broad spectrum CBD.
Must have so been full spectrum, well, right? Because broad spectrum.
Full spectrum. I'm sorry. Full spectrum. Sorry. And so he was taking that and he got a urine request. So he goes and he gets his urine test done, not thinking that anything would happen. Now there's a couple lessons here. One is he switched his product. He used to take isolate, but he went to a local CBD shop in the area that he lived in and bought a product off the shelf. And it did not say on the bottle that it had 0.03% THC. It did not say it anywhere. And they did not give him a certificate of analysis. Oh. So that's a problem. So then he takes this, not realizing that this would pop on a urine. He didn't know. He's naive. He's a CBD patient. He doesn't know anything. So he goes and he takes this product and they go and they process his urine. And now they fire him for drug use. Because he had THC in his system and he was well within the limits of a patient that would be taking a 0.03% product. It was not over. So he called me and said, hey, look, can you help me with this? I understand unions. Now you guys know that I had that background from my dad's, you know, teachings over the years. And so I said, sure. So I went in there armed and worked, locked my arms with the union. I educated the union because it wasn't the Teamsters because they would know how to do this. These people didn't have a clue. So here I'm telling them, look, da-da-da, got to do this. Here's the farm bill. There was a violation. It's a federal right issue. His federal rights were violated. He was terminated unwillfully. This is unacceptable. So we got in there and I was able to plead the farm bill, thankfully. And really press on them that this was a federal violation. This could lead to a lot of things. Unfortunately for him, fortunately for them, they are a borough, which meant they had borough meetings and they had an upcoming borough meeting. And I threatened to show up at the borough meeting with press to let the people know that you fired somebody and violated their federal rights. Lo and behold, they decided to allow him to come back to work. They paid him back pay and all that good stuff. And now they don't mess with him anymore.
Wow. Wow. Thank you. And, you know, that's the craziest thing so much is that, I mean, obviously, you know, it's all, once again, we talk about transition and, you know, coming from San Francisco and seeing in Pennsylvania and seeing how things take time, right, in terms of the culture and this and that. But, you know, it's a shame, right, that this is, you know, an issue. And it just shows how, you know, 0.3 of THC is going to get somebody in trouble where you think it's going to get somebody high, all these kind of things. But, you know, the whole thing is what, you know, we see it's something that we're seeing this week, right? It's April 22nd. And, you know, we're just, you know, we're dealing a lot with accountability, right? We're talking this week a lot right. about accountability, you know, and that's right. like kind of the word of the week and the word of the time, you know, is just, you know, the system's not going to be changed overnight, right? But when we hold people accountable, right, then the next person may think twice about their actions and think about what they can and can't get away with and everything like that. And, you know, this work that you're doing here, right, guess what? It's going to help the next person. It's going to help the next person. And years from now, you know, it's not going to be an issue. You know, it's like, you know, if a person, right, we're talking about medical use, but also recreational use. If a person goes and they have a few drinks at night, they're going to come back the next day and get fired for that, you know, and right. You know, and then that's just recreational, you know, and adult use. But, you know, medical and using this for wellness and for everything else that goes on, it's just a shame, right? Because they could be on all kinds of other narcotics, right? That wouldn't be
driving a truck or a bus or who knows what, right?
Yeah. You're in the pharmacy. You came from pharma school, so you understand, you know, and all these
yes. other things.
So, I mean, but thank you, you know, because like I said, it's all just it's a process, right? I think we want change now. And of course, it's something to look forward to. But I think we also have to be willing to be patient as the, you know, and push ahead, not saying like, oh, it's going to happen. All right, cool. Because that's what you're doing, right? That's the whole point.
Yes.
Is by holding people accountable, that's how the systems change.
Right. And you can't lose hope. That's the best way for me to say it, right? Because I've been hitting the wall, like I've hit the wall plenty of times. Trust me, this hasn't been, you know, tea and cookies over here. It's difficult. It's been difficult. I mean, I get scrutinized by traditional pharma execs that have been my friends. Not so much now, but when I first got into it, I did. And then even with my son,
what do they say. You know?
Well, what's going on, Christina? Are you now like smoking out of a bong? Like what was going on? Like, I don't understand. And I hadn't even announced yet. And I had not even, just so everyone knows, I was not a patient when I got into this industry doing clinical research. I just was going on what I had read and what I had been watching because I'm a clinical research person. So I'm reading a lot and seeing a lot come up on CBD, CBG, CBN, all this stuff. And I'm like, wait a minute, why aren't we doing a better job with this? Why aren't we advancing this as a therapeutic area? And I know our advancement, and I know how to do that with my training.
Why aren't we?
Right. So that's how I got into it. It's hard. Let me tell you, my friend, it's very hard I'm working right now on a head-to-head study. So it'll be a traditional pharma product versus a proprietary product that's made in Pennsylvania under the program. I can't say who the company is, obviously. But we submit it to an institutional review board to review our protocol, everything like you normally would do in clinical research. And I keep getting hammered with all these weird requests from them because they don't understand cannabis. They don't understand CBD. So they're asking for toxicology, all these things that we have the data for. But this is an observational first time in human study. Now, keep in mind, we've been making this product in Pennsylvania the entire program. So of course there's toxicology data. It's just not in the way that you understand traditionally. So that my job is to bridge the gap and get it done so that these patients can go get into the study, that my clients' needs are satisfied, and they demonstrate efficacy and safety for their product over this traditional pharma company, then what? It's a game changer. And that's something like, again, I'm butting up against these guys, but I'm going to keep going like the bull I am.
Wait, so, I mean, that brings up another interesting point that makes me curious. So we're talking about people here. They're also in clinical research, but you're telling me they just don't understand cannabis. Now, is it a thing that they don't understand cannabis because they were raised under the same kind of stigma and everything that goes on? Or is there part of the system, you know, in terms of clinical research that even if this, the passing of time 20 years from now, if you're put through the same kind of system, through the same kind of regulations, it will continue to be, you know, foreign to you? Or talk to me about that process. Are we going to be opening up a little bit? It's kind of great to be that way.
3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, lift off.
We at Calican are passionate about cannabis and CBD marketing, branding, SEO content, and web design. If you are a cannabis owner and you know you need an uptick in business or an upgrade in the way your customers perceive you, come check us out at calican.com and schedule a time to speak with us today.
I mean, that's my vision, right? Is that we open up the floodgates. I mean, one of the things we need to do is take this off of Schedule 1, because right now I'm handcuffed when I do clinical research. When I work on the traditional side, if I want to move my study drug to do a clinical study, I can move it all over the country. I can export it with following the regulatory requirements. With cannabis, you can't, right? I can't move my product from Pennsylvania to Connecticut and run a study in Pennsylvania, Connecticut, and then San Francisco without a DEA license, Well, that's not normal in clinical research. We just put the product where it needs to go based on where the site is located, the clinical trial site. So that's the first thing that needs to happen, really. But secondarily, this education, this constant education that we're doing, like that I'm doing now with the IRB, where I'm going to be requesting a meeting and I'm going to lay it out for them and explain how this works, how the program works, how the cannabinoid works, you know, all these things, how all this works, the endocannabinoid system, how all this works, so that they can then realize that this is a nutraceutical, not a biologic. That's the problem. People want to put this in the biologic category when it's a plant. It cannot, it's not synthetic. It's a plant. Biologics are synthetic. Nutraceuticals are plants.
Oh, amazing. I mean, but then there's also the aspect, right, where I think that's one of the barriers, right, for the pharmaceuticals is that it's nutraceutical, right? And is there like a active prevention there from going on, right? Or, you know, because there's really no way to benefit from it in that regard, or talk to me about that.
I'm sure there's PACs, political action committees, involved to, you know, push back on us in the cannabis space. Because, you know, think about it. If we're able to prove that, just say this study I was telling you about, if we're able to prove that this compound that was developed by this company works better with less side effects than the traditional pharma product, there you go. There goes all the money. I mean, not towards the other company. I'm not saying that they're trying to be like them. What I'm trying to say is patients would be less, I would think, as a patient, I would be less inclined to take a traditional pharma product if I could take a nutraceutical that had a safe and efficacious product, rather than having to worry about, you know, having to take a whole bunch of other pills now because now my liver is messed up or my kidney's not functioning or I'm getting headaches. You know, that's what happens, right? There's a lot of side effects on TV when they talk about drugs that are approved and they tell you, you should take blah, blah, and they tell you all the side effects and it's fine print. That's out there, right?
Fine print. I mean, now it's like, you know, they have it's like a 3-minute ad, right? And the whole last minute is people dancing and the guy's like, don't take this if you're allergic to this drug. And I'm like, well, how would you know if you're allergic to it if you haven't taken it yet? You know, exactly. and then it goes down, you know, if you have, you know, and it just goes down for a minute long. I'm like, oh my gosh, this sounds painful.
Hemorrhaging, all kinds of things, right?
I wouldn't consider myself an expert like yourself, but I was involved in clinical research for a while, you know, for people on dialysis with kidney failure, right?
And, oh, CKD.
Yeah, you know, but, you know, this was already back, you know, 10 years ago, a little bit less. Anyways, point being 7 years ago, something like this. And I wasn't doing that for about 3 years. But point being was, you know, to see, and it was an experimental drug and to see how it affected people, you know, and for them, they're like, listen, I'm already going to die soon anyways. You know, if it helps up somebody else, that's fine. And they didn't mind signing their life away. But some people, you know, die because of the drug, you know, and it was
That's like the vaccines.
Oh yeah. Don't open up a can of worms over here, Christina.
Because you're in a perpetual clinical study getting a vaccine, I mean, right? Because they don't know. They don't know what don't know.
I've had this argument with so many people, and the whole thing is everybody will say, hey, well, you know, the pros outweigh the cons in this regard. I said, how do you know if you don't know? Like, that's the whole point. Well, because people are dying left and right from this and that. I said, but we're not going to know. And I'm not even talking about longitudinal studies. I'm talking about short-term studies even, you know? And I'm like, who knows there's going to be 20 years from now, but even 2 years from now, you know, 6 months from now. And that's why, you know, I live in Israel, right? And Israel's become like a, you know, a live testing ground,
yeah.
You know, where everybody, and, you know, and it was just like become this place. And I'm the bad guy, you know, I'm the bad guy because I'm asking questions. And everybody's just like, come right. on, just do it. Just get it. Come on, just do it.
And that's the thing. I had this discussion last night from an advocacy standpoint, because I have an elderly person who is considered taking the vaccine and they have an autoimmune. And so they came to us and asked for my counsel. Would I recommend that they take this? As a researcher, now I'm not a doctor, everybody out there, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a PhD even, but I'm a clinical research person and I look at data all the time and I design studies to get the right data to show efficacy and safety, right? So I understand this. And so from a researcher standpoint, but also an advocate, I'm concerned. You know, I haven't gotten my vaccine. So, and I'm worried about getting COVID, right? Because of the fact that I have two autos and I have allergy, real bad allergy problems. I was just at the allergist not too long ago and I went into an immune flare because of allergy testing, just from allergy testing. I'm not getting it unless I'm forced to, which I believe would be against my constitutional rights here in the United States. But I just, there's not enough data and I don't want to sign up for a clinical study.
Constitutional rights, because, you know, like I said, I'm in Israel. It's all about, you know, guess what? Everything's open now, you know, everything's open. And, you know, the whole idea is, you know, you have to have, you know, we have this QR code. Everybody here has their QR code. And when you have it, you can go into the bars and you can go here. I mean, nobody really enforces any secret. They're not enforcing it anyways. But you know what I mean? Like, that's the way that they're actually, you know, incentivizing people to go out and get it. You know, it's like, oh, everything's open, but you need to have this app on your phone that shows that it, you know, has your thing and, you know, and show me your QR code and all that fun stuff. So it's not even about, you know, the rights, you know, being forced to. It's about, you know, this intense peer pressure from people who really don't know what they're talking about, you know?
Right. Nurses will call patients and be like, isn't it time for you to schedule? Are you making money off of this? Why are you calling these patients? Like, that's collusion.
It's not even, you know, the whole thing is so I have my my wife, she has two moms, right? They're both nurses. And so, I mean, obviously I've been hearing it, you know, sorry, Tacy, if you're listening to this, you know, but, you know, I've been hearing this like nonstop, you know, it's not even that collusion in the sense that they're benefiting from it for them is like a safety issue. You know what I mean? Because for them, it's like, okay, if everybody's vaccinated, then I'm not, you know, cause they've been on the front lines this whole time. And, right. you know, so they have a different perspective, so to speak, where it's just like, of course they were waiting the moment that they got the vaccine. They're like, everybody get the vaccine now, you know, regardless
people
of what is in it, no matter
COVID.
What's doing to you.
They're still getting COVID with the vaccine though.
I mean, the efficacy is not bad. The efficacy is pretty good. Well, I've seen, you know, 95%, somewhere around there.
40% of the elderly, a study just came out yesterday, 40% of the elderly patients in the United States that have received the vaccine have gotten COVID after. 40%.
I mean,
in the elderly pop. So 60 and above.
Really, you know, obviously you need it, you know, so I mean.
Because I'm working on COVID studies.
It's already well
done. That's why.
It's accepted already, you know, obviously, you know, yeah, of course you're going to get the vaccine. It's going to hurt. You're going to get a second vaccine. You're going to be sick for 2 days. You might as well call in to work sick because you're going to be sick, but it's for your good and everything like that. You know, it's okay. That's one thing that we're accepting, but just like, it's just cool. Like I said, you know, when I was doing medical research and I saw people dying from the experimental drug, I was like, I'm never going to sign up for one of these things. You know, let me see the data first. And whenever I say, let me see the data, you don't need to see the data. And I'm just like, dude, I just want to see, you know, that's it. What are you, conspiracy? What are you, this? I'm like, no. What are you, anti-vax? I'm like, no, dude, you're missing the point completely. You're not listening to
right.
Because your brain is telling you to regurgitate what you've been told. Anybody who's saying no, this is what you're supposed to tell them to convince them. You know, I had a friend that was like, I'm pregnant. Are you trying to kill my baby? I'm like, what are you talking about? I was like, that's it. I got to go. Like, that was like ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so.
Yeah. I don't mean to laugh, but yeah, I get it all the time. You know, because, you know, I'm actually working on treatments for COVID. So I'm one of the, you know, I filed my first protocol last March, March 30th, when there were only 265,000 cases in the United States. Huh. And, you know, I'm working in the Dominican Republic right now on another treatment protocol that's also been filed in the United States for a PIND. So pre-investigational new drug app. So I know a lot about COVID. So that, you know, I designed this protocol before really anybody knew anything. This was March of last year. We didn't really know what the hell happened with this virus. Oh, okay. You have diarrhea. You can't smell. Yeah, you might have clots. There wasn't a lot of side effects to COVID back in March. So imagine trying to design a study that you're like, well, it's kind of like, cool. And we were successful. And I was able to pick up a lot of the palliative stuff that I was able to foresee was going to be an issue. Thank God. But that's only because I've been in clinical research for so long. Because we didn't know then.
Wow. Incredible. I mean, so cool. So definitely, I mean, you know, changing gears a little bit, talk to me about now Affinity Bio Partners, what you're doing, what's going on, you know, and what's the whole game with that?
Oh, okay. So Affinity Bio Partners is a global clinical research organization. So we work all over the world. and run clinical studies. We organize, manage, optimize. We help find patients through our AI bot called the Dr. Bot or Cannabot for the cannabis side of the business. We work both in the traditional space, but then, you know, as you can tell, primarily in medical cannabis and the nutraceutical space. The last year I've been working in COVID, on COVID studies, which has been kind of crazy. And, you know, with all the things that were happening, you know, we were one of the biotech companies that got my client that got hacked by the Chinese that came out in the press last year that said China and two other countries hacked the US FDA. We were one of them. And it was like kind of scary to me because I never experienced that ever in my entire career. And this was the first time I filed in CDER in the FDA myself. Normally I have a regulatory partner. They do that. I don't do this. So I was already scared. And then I get hacked and I'm like, oh my God, like it was horrible. They put a virus on top of my filing. So then we started working with the administration last year, the White House. I've never worked with the White House in my career. So that was like really crazy. All of this was through Affinity BioPartners. So Affinity BioPartners is really the foundation, I would say, for all of the companies and everything I do, because without research, without understanding whether or not these things will survive from an efficacy and safety standpoint, I can't adequately help patients without proper therapeutic advancements, right? So everything kind of goes hand in hand with each other.
Amazing. Amazing. Cool. So yeah. So, Christina, you know, I know obviously you got a lot of stuff going on. I'm sure you've had a lot. We've already shared a lot of the problems that you've had to face. What's like the biggest obstacle you're still facing in your business and how are you able to overcome that?
Well, you know what? It's still COVID, right? And so we still have enrollment challenges in clinical trials because of COVID. Because patients are afraid to come out of their homes, right? Because either they've had COVID exposure and they know they're afraid they can get it again, or perhaps they didn't have COVID, but they're in a population like mental health, right? Where they're very scared to come out of their homes to participate in a clinical study. So what we've had to do was use technology really to supplement these visits so we can do virtual visits with these patients and still record the data, still have them in the studies, have home nurses, contracts with home nurses. So they come to give the drug, especially if it's a Schedule I situation, whether it's, you know, cannabis or say, you know, traditional med study where it's a Schedule I, because I'm working on a study right now that's traditional for mental health and the drug is a Schedule I. And so, which is hard to even work, you know, in traditional, if it's a Schedule I drug. So COVID has definitely impacted us tremendously, but also in a positive manner, because it put our focus now on how to help people who can't get out, who are homebound, who, you know, we have lockdowns, all this stuff that's happened, right? And they can't leave their homes. We had figured out things to get around this last year. Spectral. That's why we pushed out our telemonitoring platform. I just had a meeting with my tech guys today with all the stuff that we've built in there in the back end. So that way it was ready when we needed to use it. So we've been using it to help patients all, you know, those past however many months. Wow. But for my traditional clients, you know, through Affinity Bio, it's been difficult. COVID's definitely been a difficult thing to get around.
No, yeah. And I mean, first of all, that this morning already, right? You wake up early, everything you're doing. So love it. But yeah, I mean, no doubt. I mean, it seems like you already had a crystal ball. You already had some of the tech in place, right? That you just kind of yes. Able to implement right away. You know,
yes.
A lot of people, they're kind of a year behind or definitely many months behind because it was just kind of like, I mean, who could have predicted, right? But it's just a matter of you kind of probably already had some of these obstacles already. And now it's just kind of like, oh, well, we should have our own tech to be able to communicate and everything like that. And just so happens that now this is the norm, you know, so very good. So, you know, transitioning here, you know, is first and foremost, I want to hear what, you know, as we wrap up, you know, what can we expect from Affinity BioPartners here in the future? What do you guys have coming up?
Oh, so we have a head-to-head study going on that's we're trying to get through the IRB right now. That's going to be the first head to head. So traditional pharma versus that medical cannabis product that was made proprietary here in Pennsylvania, specifically for the study. It's going to be a quick and dirty 90-day observational one doctor study. Hopefully we can get that approved through the IRB in the next couple of weeks so we can get started, because this will be the first time that anybody stacked up against traditional pharma versus cannabis in a trial. Most of the time, people push through, right? They push through in the therapeutic area they want to study, whatever it is, with their cannabis or their CBD or a nutraceutical product. But this client of mine, they're from pharma initially. So they've got the same type of pedigree that I have. So they know that if you really want to stack your chips against pharmaceutical companies saying, hey, you're a leader, your stuff works for whatever's wrong with these people, you have a low safety profile, meaning you don't have adverse events every other day, you don't have serious adverse events, people are hospitalized, that this actually works. If you're going to stack it, you're going to have to stack it against a pharmaceutical product and show hands down you're better than they are. That's the only way cannabis is going to move ahead, or CBD in this industry, to become a therapeutic treatment option for patients that will be paid for by insurance. Because at the end of the day, patients can't continue to pay for their products with cash. Nobody lives like that nowadays, right?
Oh yeah, and that's huge. I mean, obviously, and I think, you know, this is something we've been waiting for a long time. Obviously, you know, I have a little bit of background in medical research, not like yours, obviously, but, you know, in terms of, you know, one of the things that I've seen, you know, don't want to take too much time, but obviously, you know, funding, right? Funding being the major issue when it comes to these kind of things, right? Because pharma's doing a lot of the studies, right? And a lot of studies coming from schools, you know, and all that fun stuff. So obviously pharma doesn't want to see these kind of results that we're looking for, and schools are federally funded, so they can't touch any of this stuff, right? So, I mean, how are you able to, you guys self-funded, or how are you guys doing these studies?
So these guys, this client in particular, raised privately their funding. So that's how they're paying for their studies. But keep in mind, they're traditional pharma guys, right? So their Rolodex of potential funding partners is pretty robust. And so because they had done certain things in the traditional space that were major things that they were able to accomplish, it's easier to sell that to a funder, right, than it is when you're an unknown. And so luckily, they've done amazing work in the past, and that's how they're paying for this first study. And they're publicly traded, this company. So they have a lot, you know, at stake here with the results of this study. You know, like if it bombs, it could really crush their stock. But if it does well, then the gates open, right? And here we go to the next level. Let's go. Let's file the IND. So we can move forward so that we can get an FDA approval in this indication, because this indication is an indication where patients suffer from this disease pretty frequently, and it's a big patient population. So this could really impact the safety and well-being for a lot of our patients in a positive manner.
Wow, Carmen, you know, it's a crazy, crazy game too. The whole thing is such a game, right? Because publicly traded, right? Knowing that a study is going to bomb and it's going to affect your stock, or it's going to shoot up, you know?
You're hedging.
It's crazy. It's crazy. I mean, when I was doing medical research to my boss, that was in charge of it, right? I mean, that's what her whole game. She was all about that. You know, she would be in charge of the research on one end, and on the other side playing, you know, with the stocks and everything like that. So it's she was doing pretty well, that's for sure. So it's crazy stuff. That's a whole nother rabbit hole I'd love to get into another time when we have time with that.
Definitely. Sure. Let's get positive results as we think is going to happen, and then, you know, we'll be able to talk about it. Like, I mean, it's going to be one of the biggest things I've done in my career, quite frankly. You know, this will be it. You know, like all this other stuff I've been working on, you know, all the FDA drugs I have approved under my belt. Yeah, that's great. And I'm proud of myself for that. But this will be it. This is a loaded gun. So
crazy.
I'm also nervous about the outcome, because then, you know, you'll make a lot of enemies potentially, right?
damned if you do, damned if you don't, right? You know, it's one way or the other, you're going to piss somebody off, right? So,
well, and it just shows the patients that we try to help every day that it's worth it. You know, like it's worth it to me to put my neck out there a little bit for the advancement of medical treatments for them, because somebody has to do it, right? We can't continue to go whoop, whoop, whoop in this industry and flap our mouths, but we don't do anything, right? We just keep pushing out more and more products and we try to sell stuff and yeah, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. We don't know. We don't know what you're deficient in your endocannabinoid system. We don't know anything, but we're just pushing these products out. It's time to level up and study.
I love it. I mean, how do you see that moving, talking about the future, right? How far off are we from that kind of being the norm? You know, this is obviously a groundbreaking study, right? I mean, how far off are we from just kind of like this stuff, you know, just like any other pharmaceutical, you know, for better or worse, you know, kind of the testing and everything that goes along with it?
I mean, honestly, I know what we have projected, you know, to be working on besides this one. Then, you know, I turn my hat and I go to Spectral, right, where we're going to be doing multiple studies and multiple indications in women's health, mental health, where, you know, we already have a patch for ADHD and pediatrics. You don't hear anybody talking about ADHD and pediatrics in the CBD or cannabis space right now, do you? Nope.
I mean, that's my kind of thing. That's where I got into it, you know, ADHD, and just wanted to slow down my brain. And that was my first entry, so to speak, into cannabis and would help me to perform well in school and all that fun stuff. And, you know, I have my my Adderall medicine and I have my cannabis and all that fun stuff. And
right. Right. So that's like the next level, right? Is to really start drilling down. Mental health is a big area for unmet medical needs. And if COVID hasn't taught us anything, not to go back to the COVID statement I made earlier about research, it also taught me a lot. From a palliative standpoint about the disease, like what happens to these patients, right? The clotting that still happens to them, the fatigue, the paranoia, the anxiety, the PTSD, they suffer almost as if they were a veteran, you know, because they may have been on a ventilator and they could hear everything while they're on the vents and then worrying that they're going to die, you know, like that's a lot for these people. So all of the stuff that I've observed and I continue to observe, I kind of felt like that was our rise, you know, like, hey, we have to do something, stop talking and shut up and do something. And that's what we're trying to do with Spectral as well, with these perpetual studies that we want to run with, you know, even women's health. It's another unmet need for a lot of patients who have various things, endometriitis, breast cancer, all these various things that have ovarian, all these things that happen. And what is there out there to help treat them? All these pharmaceutical products, but does it really help? Sometimes. Then what? When the sometimes it doesn't, what do you do? Do you give up hope? You can't give up hope.
100%, 100%. Long road to go, long road to go. But you know what? One day at a time, right? Everything is going to come whether or not we're doing our part and you're doing your part. So might as well dig deep and, you know, someone's got to do it for sure. So listen, Christine, before I let you run, I got to ask, right? I always ask this question and my favorite question, right? But seeing as how you have so much experience in so many different aspects, really interested to hear what you have to say, you know, how do you define success, whether professionally, personally, spiritually, which we've talked about already, what does success look like for you?
That's a good question. And now I think in my life, you know, in 2021, success is different than when I viewed it in 2020 and 2019 and the years prior to that. Success for me is really seeing that we're helping patients, right? Truly helping patients with whatever it is that we're doing, whether it's through Affinity Patient Advocacy, through Affinity Bio, you know, with my clients or Spectral. The deal for me and what delivers, you know, the message to me about success is how I can help someone feel better from one day to the next. That's what my goal is. So the more people that I can help, that I know I've made a difference in their lives with the things that I do, that is what success is. You know, back in the day, it would have been an FDA approval, the hands down, but that's not truly success. Now that I've been able to see a lot of these things and being in the cannabis and CBD space for now, you know, 5 years, my ideas of success are completely different than what they used to be. And I'm happy about that.
For sure. You share some of the stories, obviously, people you've impacted, and so many more than impact. So no doubt that you are successful and you continue to be successful. Christina, I appreciate you jumping on with me today. You're amazing. Want to hear more about, you know, down the road, you know, as we move along, you know, but as we close, how can listeners find out more about you, Affinity Bio Partners, connect with you and everything else?
Okay. So what I do, because, you know, like when we started off in the interview, I have all these different companies that I represent, right, as the CEO. So what I tell people now is just find me on LinkedIn under Christina D'Arcangelo. I read every single LinkedIn message that comes through. Just connect with me. My personal website, ChristinaD'Arcangelo.com, shows all the different companies I have, you know, that I work with, all the different work models that I, you know, you can really tell the type of person I am through my .com website, because you can look at Affinity Bio, you can look at APA, Affinity Patient Advocacy, you can look at all these websites, but that doesn't tell you about the person. And I think it's important that people know who I am as a person. That's one of the reasons why I launched my brand last July, was that I want people to know me for who I am. I'm not this buttoned up CEO person that's just banging around in the corporate world. That's not me. I grew up blue collar poor. You know, like I've made something out of myself by hard work and perseverance and diligence and faith in God, you know, and I'm a mom on top of it, you know? And so all this stuff is going on. I really think that's the best way to really get the bite out of Christina D'Arcangelo is on that website.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. I was checking it out. Very personable, very like, you know, not like the super corporate kind of vibe that you get. It's almost like has more like an art kind of vibe, or, you know, something like, you know, they brought me and stuff, you know, you can tell right away what people are going for. So it's very cool to see for sure. So everybody definitely check out Christina. She's amazing. Connect with her, you know, and find out everything she's doing. So Christina, I want to thank you so much for jumping on with me. Everybody at home, wherever you're listening, thank you for listening today. I know I got so much out of this. I hope you did too. So Christina, wow, thank you so much. Good luck to you and the rest of the year and beyond.
Thank you so much. I want to thank you as well for having me on today on your show and learning about you and your journey. I mean, this is exciting for me, because when I take these interview requests, it's not just to talk about me, because, you know, you ask me questions about me, but I want to know about you too, because there might be opportunities for us to work together, or, you know, things that I can do to help you, you know, and people that you're surrounded with, because that's what I do in life, is to help people have a voice when they don't have one.
Thank you, Christina. I appreciate that so much. And you're really awesome. So, you know, definitely hope to continue this conversation on another episode and offline as well, because you're freaking awesome. So thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Dank Discussions. We are so grateful for each and every one of you. Please make sure you subscribe and leave a review. We want to continue making dank content you want to hear, so give us some feedback about the topics you want covered. Feel free to reach out to us at grow@calacan.com. That's grow@calacan.com. And follow us on Instagram and Twitter for our latest updates.